For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
We have with us in studio, it is 93.7 WEEI, Rich, Ken, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson, and in studio right now, Chad Tracy, is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Chad, by the way, this is the first time I believe Ted and I have met you, but Ken right there, I hope you don't have any PTSD. Because he told me that he interviewed you with the Woo Sox and accidentally started things off by, how did you do it?
It was after his media session, and I said to Chad, I covered your dad in Pittsburgh, and boy, those teams were horrible, or something like that. We had an awkward exchange.
Chad couldn't remember, you know.
No, and you gave me a look.
So he immediately insulted. Like
I didn't mean it that way.
But it came out that way. Chad, tell me you took it that way. I would take it.
I don't actually remember you saying
that. Oh, there you go.
You're so insignificant.
Perfect.
Well, Chad, okay, so let's just start off by saying, at least you guys are hitting lately, so that's nice. I mean, obviously, the team is a little, they're snake bitten at home, and the record isn't great. But when you see some of the forward movement with the offense and you still just can't get over that hump, does any of that give you any kind of hope? I know you want the wins and I know you want the W's, but at least there's some sort of step offensively that looks like you're going in the right direction.
I think that's well said. Yeah. I mean, you got to win games. Like, everybody knows that. Coaches know that. Players know that. So there is no moral victories. But there is, in a sense, when you're playing a 162-game schedule and the American League is not performing as a whole, and you feel like, you know, as we've gone along in the month I've been here, like, you know, hey, our offense needs to be better. Mm-hmm. And you feel pretty strong that your pitching is going to be good, you know, that even if it has a blip here and there. So to see us scoring runs, like, you know, consistently, you know, getting, you know, 4, 5, 6 runs at least over the last couple of weeks, as a group in a baseball sense, you look at that and say, if we can continue this for a long stretch of time, we like our chances, you know.
Yeah.
That being said, it's happened to come at a time when we were enough games under 500 where we realized we have a lot of work to do as well.
Can you read anything into it being Fenway where you guys seem to be snake bit most of all?
No, other than just the results of the games this week, you know, where you feel like, you know, maybe you get a lead and you didn't hold it, you know, like, mm-hmm. And then you're trailing and you make a, you know, a vicious comeback like we have 3 out of the last 4 nights and it comes up just short. And so, yeah, that can make you feel snake bitten and make you feel like that sense of like, man, nothing's going right. But at the same time, like, there are still a lot of good things happening that weren't before.
Yeah.
And you have to look at it that way. But, you know, no question, like, you know, there's a lot of things we have to do better. We have to win games. Like, and the biggest one and the most telling one is, like, we got to win games at home.
Yeah.
You know, and that changes the whole dynamic. So we get all that. But how do you do that? Like, take the pitching and the offense and put them together for a stretch of time. Mm-hmm. That's how teams go on runs where you say, hey, man, they won 12 out of the last 15.
Yeah.
That's how that happens. You take the pitching that's been good at times, you take the offense, which looks better, and you put those together. And if you have one of those runs, everybody looks up and goes, man, like, they're kind of right in it, or they're in the second wild cards, but whatever. That's how you have to look at it when you have 100 and whatever games left.
Chad, can you tell me, because there's been kind of conflicting reports, can you tell me exactly what's wrong with Roman Anthony's injury? Like, what his actual injury is?
It's a strain in his tendon in his finger on the top of his hand. So it's basically just gives him discomfort with certain movements and the way he flexes his wrist to swing.
Okay.
So he was able to take some swings yesterday for the first time, which was good. It was progress over the last time he tried to swing, and it still was uncomfortable. So there's a lot of things he's able to do. Obviously, this is not related to his legs. He's able to keep his legs in order. He can shag. He can run. He can throw. Mm-hmm. This motion doesn't hurt it as much. So it's a waiting game is all it is. And I know that's tough, but the nature of the injury is you got to be able to swing. You got to be able to use your wrists and your hands to swing a baseball bat. So you're waiting for that discomfort to go away so then you can ratchet up the activity.
So would you consider his injury a matter of pain tolerance?
In a way, it can be described as that. But also no at the same time, because I could say as a player, like, there's maybe something that bothers you on a certain part of your body. I can handle that. But, like, if I have to swing a bat for a living, and I have to go out in my job, especially Roman, like, everybody knows Roman has seen him last year, like, what this guy can do to help us, right?
Yeah.
Which is with a bat in his hand in the batter's box.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest attribute to help this team, and I can't do that with one hand.
Yeah.
You know, like, what you would be asking him to do.
It is not hard to destroy a college. Last season, the podcast Campus Files brought you stories of fraternity drug rings, stolen body parts, campus cults, and more.
And now Campus Files is back for another season.
There's a guy screaming into his phone. He's like, I just saw Charlie Kirk get assassinated right in front of me.
Every week is a new episode and a new story.
It was so chaotic. It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Like, you know, we got to be able to get him healthy, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you want to take a guy that can give you his best of what that is and then say, but we only got 50% of that because one of his hands is not functioning properly. So
yeah,
I mean, in a sense, like, he's got to be able to be comfortable with it, but because of where it is,
yeah,
it's really hard to do that.
So that's a good way to describe it, because I, you know, Ted being an ex-athlete, and we've spoken to athletes before, that you know, when you hear that a player is dealing with pain tolerance, and that's right, the thing that's wrong, you know, it almost, we have heard from athletes that, you know, it classifies an injury when it's pain tolerance. It paints the player as being soft if they right, don't return.
Right.
So, you know, and can you see how that clarification, you know, really helps out a player, like what you just said, that it's not just a pain tolerance thing? Because if you're Roman Anthony, you're like, oh, geez, man, you know, what are people thinking if they think it's just, I'm not tough enough to get out there and play? But it seems that that's not the case. It affects the actual, like, his actual performance.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, try to think of it like if you're an outfielder and your shoulder's barking a little bit. Well, you know, you might have to throw two balls during the game, and you throw the ball in and hit the cutoff man. Like, that's different than, this guy's impact is as a hitter, but one of his hands isn't working.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, that's not an apples to apples thing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there are things that all athletes have, you know, pain and discomfort at different times during the year. And they say, I can grind through this because I know overall, like, it's not going to affect, you know, the outcome of a game.
Mm-hmm.
But as a hitter of Roman's capability and what he's able to do, hey, we need you to hit without one of your hands. Like, you know, without, you know, full use, like, that's not it. So, like, for us as an organization, like, yes, we want him to get healthy. Yes, we want him back.
Yeah.
But we're not looking like, oh, it's 50%. Like, get out there. You know, like, it's not easy to do that. So, we want it to move along. Like, I hope he gets better fast. And we're making improvements now, which is great.
Is he going to be sent down? Like, to get some.
Oh, I would imagine so at this point. You know, like, we haven't fully got into that yet. We'll start talking more about that as we get closer to feel like, hey, he's ready to go. But the amount of time he's missed, like, it's probably fair to the kid. Like, let's go get some at-bats and get our timing back.
Chad, how's the overall morale right now? Who are your dudes? Who are the guys that you've identified as maybe being kind of the flag carriers that, you know, picking guys up and kind of pulling guys through these, you know, times like right you're in right now?
Believe it or not, the morale's pretty good. Interestingly enough, like, I feel like it's almost better now than it was 2 weeks ago when we were winning games, but finding a way to win them like 3-2 and just scratching out some wins. But because the bats have started to come to life a little bit, I feel the morale, and I think it's what we just talked about, the sense of the guys knowing, like, in the long haul, if we found our rhythm offensively, we can hold on to that for a while. They feel pretty good about we'll have a run at some point. But to answer your question, all of them, like, you know, Wilson Contreras has been an amazing addition for us. Like, he's been around the league for a long time and plays the game as hard as a veteran player as that you'll ever see. You know, that is huge for us. And we have, you know, Crochet and Ranger, all these guys, Sonny, when they're not pitching, they're the guys standing right on top of the dugout, rooting for the group to get it going. They know what it can mean if our offense gets going. So we have a really tight-knit group. And I think when you kind of watch what's going on, everybody's on the same page and feels like, you know, is our record what we want? Not even close. Like, it's not good enough. But I think everybody views it the same way, that, like, the team's capability if we do some of the things we're talking about. Like, you know, it could be a 2-week stretch where that changes dramatically, and you have to continue to look at it that way.
We're talking to Sox manager Chad Tracy, and one addition to the game that I love this year is the introduction of the ABS challenge system. I get irrationally excited when it's challenged. I know the people in the crowd too. It's like everyone leans forward and yeah. Are they going to get this one right? It's quick and it's truly added to, I think, the enjoyment of the game. However, when it comes to ABS challenges, the Red Sox, I just looked it up, they're unfortunately dead last. They're the only team as of this afternoon that has lost more challenges than they've won. I think it's a success rate of 48%.
Yeah.
Is that something you're discussing with the players? And is the team doing like any kind of teaching on when to challenge and what they should be doing?
Talk about it a lot, actually. Talked about it yesterday. Believe it or not, like, you guys know I've been in AAA for a long time. This stuff originated in AAA. I've been watching it for 4 years. Mm-hmm. 48% sounds terrible, and it's, you know, but even in AAA, all the years they did it, like, I think the average was like around 51. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's not a massive thing. Like, you know, it's usually just 50-50, slightly above. And we have numbers that we look at. I don't want to turn it into a math equation, but like per challenge that we get right, like, our run value is actually pretty good. The problem is we're not challenging enough. We leave opportunities on the table. So our conversations with our players are not necessarily about missing one, because everybody misses half of them, like, you know, on average.
Yeah.
It's more about there are opportunities, even maybe in situations where there's nobody on base, where, you know, you want to use those and keep them around for big situations.
Yeah.
But there are certain egregious calls with nobody on. If you know, you know. Go, you know, and not leaving strike one that's this far outside and just being okay with it being strike one.
Yeah.
That's the conversations, is like, you know, is being more more willing to use them in spots that maybe aren't with bases loaded. But if you know, you know. So we're having conversations around that topic pretty regularly, trying to get that thing to swing the other direction.
For instance, Ranger missed one yesterday.
That was not a great one.
Not a great one.
No.
And he knows that too.
Are pitchers even allowed? I mean, some teams just
bang. Every once in a while, a pitcher in frustration, or if they think maybe somebody says they'll rip one, and that happens. But yeah, that one was far, pretty far outside.
Yeah, like instantly, I was like, "Hang on, what's going on?"
That one was pretty far outside.
Go for it.
I was just going to ask you about Craig Breslow. He had a quote that he said, "You guys are feeling each other out, getting to know each other. Obviously, you know who each other are, but I'm sure in a more intimate sense." How's that been from your perspective? You know the players probably maybe better than you do Craig in some sense.
Talking about Craig and I?
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's been good. He's, you know, obviously, we know each other. It's been the last few years as me working on Myers, but just not a lot of, you know, day-to-day interaction.
Yeah.
So now I've been here a month, and he's very present, and we get to have multiple conversations a day before the game, after the day, and that's come along nicely. You know, the more you're around somebody, the more you get to talk to them and see how they view things, and they get to see how you view things, and you kind of take your two thought processes and put them together. In addition to our staff, that's really good. So that's come along well as far as, you know, he and I's working relationship.
For instance, like on the Marcelo Meyer decision to play him at short, to not play him at short, how close do you guys, how many discussions do you have to have with management about what the lineup is on a day-in, day-out basis?
Lineup-wise, none. None. As far as Marcelo playing short, yeah, we had a lot of conversations around that. And that wasn't just Brez and I. That was Flo, who works with our infielders on a daily basis, myself, Brez, Eddie Romero. Like, we all talked about, you know, how we're going to handle that, all the way down to knowing, like, we have to wait and see, like, what's going on with Trevor Story. Like, do you want to mess with this young kid and move him to second, and then 2 weeks later have to, or move him to short, rather.
Yeah.
2 weeks later have to move, all the ways of the different things and how it affects people, and being very strategic about where we're going to do that. And then once we realized that was going to be a long-term thing, we're going to move the kid over there. We got him the work he needed. But as far as day-to-day, here's who's playing tomorrow. Like, I get with Flo and we talk about that at the end of the day, and we look at it, and I make a lineup and send it out. Like,
yeah.
and base that on what I'm seeing, what I think's good matchups for the pitcher we're going to face the next day, who do I think's playing well and I want to keep in there. And sometimes Brez is in there and has thoughts or whatever, but for the most part, like, not for the most part, holistically, that I've said this before, pen to paper, like, at the end is my decision.
With Roman out, Jaren Duran's more of an everyday player now, and it feels like there's maybe a correlation to his uptick in his hitting. Do you see it that way? Just the fact that he's he's getting to play in the field more, and that maybe that's a reason why he's hitting the ball a little bit better, or is it something else?
I don't necessarily think it's because the field. I think, you know, maybe there's something to it. He's in there every day, and it's in the same spot in the lineup. That could be. It could be that he's finding a little bit of a rhythm, you know, and he's starting to square the ball up. There was periods there in my first couple weeks where, like, he wasn't getting results and he was hitting balls hard. That can start to grind on you mentally when you feel like you're doing everything right and you're not getting the results. He's getting some results now, so it could just be that, you know, as an athlete, when you start to feel positive things happen, it starts to stack. But certainly, like, maybe just leading off every day and the trust of being there. What I know about Jaren is when Jaren's good and Jaren is himself, he helps us score runs. Mm-hmm. You know, any guy leading off, if he's struggling, you're not going to score. But when he is right and what he's capable of doing as a leadoff hitter, hit the ball out of the ballpark, hit it in the gap for a triple, he helps us win. So he's starting to swing the bat better, and it's probably no coincidence that we're scoring a little bit more too.
Chad, it's been kind of interesting watching the way you put the lineup together, and that you are definitely someone who it seems like believes in having a merit-based lineup. If somebody gets in there and you give them a shot and they play well, they seem to end up having more playing time. And by the same token, if somebody goes in there, you give them a shot, sometimes they'll go back on the bench. Like, yeah. How has that philosophy affected how you put the card together every day?
Well, sometimes it's, you know, you see a guy maybe goes in there and does well and he's not. Some of it's based on, like, who you're facing, yeah. You know, and you take a look at an opposing pitcher, you know, and there's lefties in the league that are more vulnerable to right-handed hitters, you know, and it makes sense to stack right-handed hitters, you know, and get as many difficult matchups for that pitcher in there as possible. And some of your right-handed hitters are better at hitting lefties. So that's part of it. And then the next day there's a righty and the lineup switches. Well, it's because there's a righty on the mound and you're looking at all the information about your own players, what this guy's we're facing is good at or not. And then in other senses, it's, when I got here, like, we were struggling offensively, so I was doing different things to try to spark the offense, and also taking my own. I had just gotten here, take my own mental notes of what I'm seeing, what do I think a quality at bat looks like, and how do I get as many of those in the lineup as I can. Quality at bat score runs, you know, more, and quality at bat can be you made an out and you saw seven pitches and drove the pitch count up, like, that can be a quality at bat. So I'm watching these things and trying to figure out, like, how do I get to a place where I feel like that's the best lineup on a given day. And I think you guys have seen, like, and it's, you know, doesn't mean it sticks, but, like, a lot of it was, how do I get Massa and Gasper both in the lineup?
Yeah.
It's been hard. He's going to have to catch. You know, I want him to go out there and catch. And Izzy has now taken a jump forward since his at-bats in Kansas City. So, like, yeah, there are things that you see, and you're seeing trends, mm-hmm. and you want to run with those things when you see them and try to keep as many quality at-bats in there you can. There's no secret that we needed to score more, so yeah. we're trying to do that.
Izzy said after the game, he came here to hit pull-side home runs, and he's had more of that. That must make the driveline guys so happy, right? This is like this is exhibit A of why we're doing this.
He wants to do more damage is probably exactly what he's trying to say. Is like Izzy's been around the game for a long time. He knows he's got a gold glove. He knows he's probably got a role to fill anywhere, right? He also knows that role in a lot of cases likely is, you know, as a utility player that doesn't play a lot. Like when I first got here, he wasn't playing much, you know. I think in his mind it was, at his age, if I want to stick around for a while and maybe I can grab some more playing time, whether it's here or, you know, next 2 years down the road, if it's somewhere else, that if he can showcase that he can do some damage. And I give him so many props for jumping in on something to say, I know who I am as a player. I know I can help, but I want to do more, you know? And that's why he's jumping in on, like, I have more capability in my bat and I'm going to try to explore those things and not be afraid of that. I give him all the credit in the world for that. And he's earned the right to get some starts right now.
Chad, I'm sorry. Am I wrong to roll my eyes every time I hear driveline and the over?
That's my fault. I brought it up.
No, it's just that it just seems like you're taking something and overanalyzing it to the point where it doesn't get in their heads. Like, if you're like a batter and you've been raised one way and you've been hitting dongs your entire life, and then somebody tries to come in and use analytics to change the way you hit, isn't that a negative effect on most players?
It can be. That's why I've said before about driveline or driveline, even if you use that word, it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. If you don't know exactly what it is, it's just becomes driveline. And everybody uses this punchline word, it's driveline. And you don't know, like, driveline you know, the hitting philosophy encompasses a lot of things, yeah. right? Swing decisions is what we call them, or for us, swing at strikes, take balls.
Yeah, right.
Would we all agree mm-hmm. that that's a very important thing?
Sure, yeah.
Good, right. yes.
That, sure. That's a good thing. Hitting the ball hard or exit velocity, hit the ball hard.
Yeah.
Is that an important thing?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Right.
Right.
Ball flight.
Now you're talking my language.
Ball flight, which is not yank it in the air at 900 feet in the air. It's like hit the ball above the infield.
Yeah.
Because that's where extra base hits are. Is that an important thing?
Sure.
This is what it is. Now, who are you as a player, right? Well, ex-player, you know, he is really good at A, B, and C, but his, you know, his swing decisions are poor.
Yeah.
They're going to focus on, like, let's make better swing decisions.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it is. It's not everybody go into the batting cage and open your front shoulder and pull it in the air. That's what I think people's view of it is. That's not
the case. It reminds me of Little League when the dad who unasked
yeah.
goes up and grabs your shoulder
right.
and pulls it Hilt sideways.
And, that's not what it is. Like, Jaren Duran, for example, like right now Jaren Duran is on a heat. We've talked about Jaren Duran just a second ago. He's on yeah. a heater. He's swinging the bat better. Like Jaren, when he swings at balls, he swings a lot. When he swings at balls, he's not good. When he takes them, he starts swinging the bat well. He's brought his chase outside the zone down about 10%
yeah.
in this period of time, and he's hitting better.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's not hit it over the monster straight down the line, and that's what people think it is. It's not the case. It's this is our pillars, and this is how we view good hitters.
Yeah.
Where do our hitters lie in each one of those things, and how can we make them better in that one or that one or that one, and make sure, hey, you're really good at that. Keep doing that.
And half of it's like being just a good therapist, right?
That's it. That's always been. That's always been a part of hitting.
Yeah,
you got to be a good therapist.
You know, one of my favorite stories.
It's the game of failure.
It is. And I remember we were talking to David Ortiz one time, and he was telling about this one time he was going through a slump, and Terry Francona is just kind of standing and watching him at batting practice, and Ortiz is just, you know, he just doesn't have it, and he goes, you know, Terry, what can I do? Like, what's wrong? Like, can you help me? And he goes, you're David freaking Ortiz. I can't tell you how to hit a baseball. And at that moment on, he went on a tear.
Yeah.
And it was just, he just needed to hear,
right.
you're one of the greatest hitters that this league has.
Right.
And he said that, boom, instantly it turned him around. And right. it's just that weird thing that someone like in your position, it's not just the X's, it's not just the you know the stats and putting right. together the lineup cards. It's literally having to be a therapist at all times.
You're not wrong about that. Like sometimes it literally is just something you say to somebody
yeah.
that reminds them, you know, because you can, it's, you know, there's more failure involved in baseball than any other sport. Mm-hmm. It's like you go to the field every day to fail.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the sport is.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just saying something like that to remind somebody as they are struggling and they forget how good they are, which is easy to do when yeah. when you go through a stretch of failure, and say something like that and they remind them, man, I'm pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
And it can be. I've seen that too, where it's like one little comment and the guy goes out and gets three hits that night. It's a mind-boggling game.
Well, let's hope the failure at home stops tonight.
I'm on that.
Let's see if maybe this
Ed's
team
taking his tarp off.
That would be
I'll be
nice.
In the right field. Check that out in the third inning.
You will not be able to miss it. Well, Chad, thanks for coming in, man. It's great to meet you the first time, and hopefully things get turned around, because as I said, you know, you have guys on this team who don't even know what Fenway is like when your team is winning.
I know.
And just to be able to tell them and show them, it's the greatest place on earth. When this team is winning, Fenway Park is one of the greatest places on earth to yep. be. And just for them to, you know, see that would be something else.
We feel the same. But they are going to work, and we're going to work, and we feel the same. That's what we're fighting for.
Awesome. All right. Well, Chad, thank you so much for coming in, and good luck tonight and for the rest of the season until we talk to you next. Chad Tracy, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. We'll be right back.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Incoming!
I was thinking maybe the Red Sox, along with the Celtics and Bruins, may have done a little better if we weren't always hearing and talking about the Patriots. The A.J. Brown talk, I have nightmares now. I wake up, is he there? Where is he? Same thing about Peter Alonso or whatever his name. All these players, forget about it. They're not coming here. And There's going to be a lockout, so we have to do what we're doing. Bitch some more.
Mama Fratelli continuing to leave us take grenades. Where is Sloth when you need him? That take grenade was brought to you by Milligan & Higgins, OUI and criminal defense attorneys. Go to MilliganandHiggins.com for a free consultation. It is Rich, Ken, and Ted Johnson broadcasting from Fenway Park at the Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay for what we pay. You pay what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and that dirty water.
Same thing about Peter Alonso.
Okay.
They should have signed Peter Alonso.
Sure. Why the hell not? All right. Christian Arcand is here in studio with us, and I hope you don't mind. I know this is before you're supposed to clock in.
That's okay.
But I need your take on something, okay?
All right, let's hear it.
Because this is interesting to me, because this weird clip just got even weirder over the last few minutes, because I've heard some things about this. So Drake May, just like Mike Vrabel, spoke to the media today. And are you telling me, first of all, is this question from Dan Roach? Is that what we're hearing? This is a Dan Roach question?
Well, that's what Cadillac subtweeted.
So okay.
Well, you've reeled me in already if it's a Roachy question.
Now, let me say this. I will fight you over, like, I will defend Dan Roach with my life. He's one of my favorite people on the planet.
F-O-R, friend of Rich.
He is an F-O-R, without a question. He's a friend of Rich. So this question, I know people are kind of like saying, what are you talking about? But just remember, it's from Dan Roach, which means the question's awesome instantly. So let's play this question that was asked to Drake May. Let's take a listen.
Follow up, Poochie's rude question. Are you thicker with two C's? Is that the way you're supposed to say it? Is that kind of like the hip thing? Are you thicker with two C's? Is that how it's supposed to be? Or
just paused, if that's anything. I think that's not the way to put it, but
do you feel conditioned as far as another year of experience, just your body getting ready for this?
I think that's just part of, you know, having a long season and be able to take some time off and come back into it and get your body right for the beginning of the season. And I think it's kind of the...
Okay, the rest of it doesn't matter. All right, so the question was, are you thicker with two C's?
Are you thicker with two
C's?
Drake, would you say your booty's popping like a balloon, or would you put it another way?
Which is so great now that I know it's Dan Roach. Now that I know it's Dan, hell yeah, Dan. I'm sending you a text in just a minute. It's a high five because you are an F-O-R, friend of Rich. Okay, so that part's interesting. But can you play it one more time? Because I want to hear what Drake May, his answer was one more time, if you don't mind, Sis.
Rude question. Are you thicker with two C's? Is that the way you're supposed to say it? Is that kind of like the hip thing? Are you thicker with two C's? Is that how it's supposed to be? Or
just paused, if that's anything. I think that's not the way to put it, but...
Okay, stop. Okay. So that's pause.
Yes.
First of all, I've never heard that before. Like, that's pause. And I originally thought, okay, does that just mean, all right, calm down. Like, what are we talking about? Put everything on pause. But apparently that's not what pause means. So you're shaking your head as if you know what pause means.
I know what pause. Pause is like an old slang thing. Like, pause has been around for a while.
Okay, so I'm...
Jay-Z was saying pause on Reasonable Doubt. Like, it's been around for a long time.
Okay, so I'm the unk here. I apparently am not...
Yes.
No, Roach is the unk.
That's right.
Roach, definitely.
I'm just learning what pause is. But what do you believe pause means?
Pause, you say, when it's like a double entendre that can be interpreted as vaguely gay.
Okay,
that's how I think of pause.
Because I looked it up, and it says pause is slang to acknowledge that something someone just said could be interpreted as having a gay or sexual connotation, usually unintentionally.
Right.
They either say pause themselves as a disclaimer, or someone else calls it out by saying that's pause.
It's like that's what she said. It's any one of those.
All right. So if somebody says something, it sounds like so. Yeah. So Dan Roach saying, "Are you thick with two C's?" So are we interpreting that Drake May said, "Dude, that's gay"? Is that what the term is? Or that could be interpreted as being...
It could be interpreted gay? That way, because that's what you say to... That's usually the way that you would use thick with two C's, or, you know, whatever. That's usually like, oh, wow, girl, you're looking thick with two C's. You know, like, that's what that...
But I would think that would be hetero.
Yeah, so that technically wouldn't be. So that's like the weird thing. But Rich, I agree with you 100%. That is what he... If you really break it down as to what this stuff means, that is what he's saying, and it's a little weird.
And Stiz, you told me that this isn't the first time that Drake has used that phrase, correct?
No, he's been doing it since he came onto the scene in New England. At least really? Since I've been following him. Yeah, we had him on every week last week. He did it quite a few times.
Okay, well, I mean, we're going to have him on every week this year too. If that's the case, I'm going to ask him, like, dude, what does pause mean? I'm old. So could you play this another situation where he used that phrase?
I'd have to go dig him, but I do have just a drop of him. This was from, again, a year ago.
Pause.
Okay, all right. So he does this.
It sounds multifaceted, though. I mean, we'll get Roche to follow up.
But I guess so, but it is kind of funny that the quarterback of the Patriots is like, dude, that kind of sounds gay.
And he's young.
Would you say you have dumps like a truck?
What a question.
It's like, what? All night long? Let me see that thong.
I mean, he is 23. Ken, how old is he? 23, 22?
Drake?
No. Drake May. Oh, yeah, Drake May. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. 23, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it's very popular amongst the youngs.
Yeah, it says origins. Came out of New York hip-hop culture in the early 2000s, yeah. Popularized by figures such as Cam'Ron,
Cameron, yeah.
And the Diplomats.
Well, Drake's married now. He's not even young. And once you get married, you're not young anymore. I mean, he's basically, he's graduated to adulthood.
I just think that's so funny. Can I hear Dan Roach, by the way?
What a question. Was amazing. No,
unbelievable.
The question was awesome. It's truly one of my favorite.
Who taught him that?
Didn't Dan Roach also like ask about someone being bow-legged earlier?
Yeah, during the draft, he asked if Dave Akis was. He's like, Elliot, it looks like he's bow-legged. A bow-legged player? And Elliot gave him like the most serious response to it. It was like he didn't even like blink. He was like, well, yeah, some people were bow-legged and some people have.
What kind of women's he been looking at? He's all about the bow-legged women with thick bodies. Hell yeah. THICC. Now, let me see what THICC.
Drake, would you say that you're thicker than a bowl of oatmeal?
Thicker than a Snicker.
Did you get the Kate Upton implants there?
Thick is slang used to describe something or someone with full, curvy, voluptuous body. Specifically referring to a
guy outside looking at us.
You know what thick is, right? Referring to a well-proportioned, fleshy figure with notable curves.
Yeah. Rude question.
Especially
in
the hips.
Two C's. Is that the way you're supposed to say it? It's kind of like the hip thing. You thicker with two C's? Is that how it's supposed to be? Or
you got paused. If that's anything.
What a question.
I'm texting Roach right
that
now.
Is question of the year.
Just saying, I am. You are getting an edible bouquet. I'm getting you an edible arrangement.
Now he would pause that.
Sure. Yeah, there we go. I think that's pause.
Yeah. Yeah, man sending another man an edible bouquet.
I would do that. Sounds like
pause.
It's generally used as a compliment, celebrating fuller body types rather than shaming them. Originally applies mainly to women, but is now used for men, animals, even objects. Quote, that's a thick burger.
I've not heard that.
Why not? Sure. Oh, God, that is just so great. That is really fantastic. Let's see what Ralph Cranston from Cranston Online wants. Ralph, are you down with the thick bodies?
Pause.
The what?
The thickness.
The thickness. Are you down with the thickness? Like, disturbedness.
I guess so. All right, I am.
All right. Hey, listen, aren't we all? All right, so, Ralph, what you got going on, buddy?
Well, look, you know, when I look at this team and you know, hear people say, well, the owner doesn't want to spend money. Breslow, who's a first-time general manager, and he does know players. The best pitcher on this team and the best reliever in baseball, to me, closer, he brought them in last year, so he kind of knew baseball. But what sickens me that they don't get is that look who's in first place in that division, Tampa Bay. Look at their payroll.
Yeah.
Now look at Boston's payroll. Now, they do things, and I blame, and I've been saying it for years, their CEO. Now, you did things, you signed up, and I'm going to include Anthony, who we don't know what he's going to be. I mean, everybody's got, we need this all-star back. We don't know this yet.
You don't, Ralph. The one thing we do know is that it most likely be a thick evening. We know that. Very, very thick.
Tonight's tonight. Roche might change the whole sports culture around. That question may just spark the whole summer.
That could be it. Like, that could be the turning point. Yeah. Can I give one more time? Please, give me the question and answer one more time.
Rude question. Are you thicker with two C's? Is that the way you're supposed to say it? Is that kind of like the hip thing? You thicker with two C's? Is that how it's supposed to be? Or
just paused, if that's anything.
Are you bow-legged? So tell me about them bow-legged thick ones. You like them bow-legged and thick? That's what we should change our show name to.
Yeah.
Bow-legged and thick in the afternoons of WEI.
Can we get a response tomorrow, Rich? Like, can you ask Dan why he said that? What possessed him? And can we get the answer tomorrow?
You better put that on DZ tonight. I want to hear that clip.
It's great. You know what, Dan? You don't have to work for the rest of the year. You have filled your awesome quota. That's just great. And then I learned a new term too. Like, we got our quarterback just saying, "Dude, I don't." That sounds somewhat sexually weird. Oh, well, God.
Somewhat.
So, I guess.
Just paused, if that's anything.
Oh, man. Well, that was fun. All right. Christian Arcand, what we got coming on?
We got the Mass Mutual pregame show. Red Sox, another heartbreaker last night, and Connelly early on the mound tonight. So.
All right. Everybody, have yourself a wonderful evening. Here's to the Red Sox not blowing it in the ninth, scoring more runs once again, but actually finishing the job. The thickness. We are down with the thickness tonight. Let's all get bow-legged and pause. Let's go, baby. Here's some Red Sox pause. Fun for you. Now I got my friends stuck.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter. This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.